Happy St. Patty's Day to all my listeners. As we continue to celebrate Women's History Month, the best month of the year here at What She Said, I'm also buzzing with excitement as I'll be heading off to Ireland in just a couple of weeks. I can't wait to share all of the adventures and stories with you upon my return. But for now, let's sprinkle a little Irish blessing for good measure. May the wind always be at your back. May the sun shine warm upon your face. Oh, and may your Guinness always be cold. This week, I'm blending the spirit of empowerment with a touch of the luck of the Irish. Here's what's coming up. I'm excited to delve into the world of political engagement with Amanda Alvero and Rachel Siegel from Beyond a Ballot. They're on a mission to amplify Canadian women's voices in the political arena, creating a space where our stances are not just formed, but fervently heard. It's a conversation about breaking down barriers and building a community where every woman's voice matters. Anne Brody is back with her latest entertainment picks just in time for St. Patty's Day. We're diving into Michael Keaton's gripping new Knox Goes Away, the thrilling conspiracy of Apple TV's Manhunt, and the delightful return of Lindsay Lohan in Netflix's rom-com Irish Wish. Anne's insights are sure to add some cinematic magic to your week. Nadine Thornhill joins me to discuss Everybody Curious, a groundbreaking web series that opens up vital conversations about sexuality and healthy relationships for youths. With its inclusive approach and unscripted dialogues, Nadine and the series are pioneering a path for open, honest discussions that are crucial for young minds today. And in recognition of Epilepsy Awareness Month, I'm speaking with Mackenzie Muldoon from Epilepsy Toronto. We'll explore the realities of living with epilepsy, the importance of Purple Day, and how we can all play a part in fostering a more understanding and supportive community. So grab your favorite green attire, pour yourself a cold one, and join me for an hour of engaging conversations and stories that matter. Here's to a show filled with empowerment, entertainment, and a touch of Irish luck. Right here on 105.9 The Region. In today's top interview, we're diving into a topic that's close to my heart, the importance of political engagement, especially among women. I'm thrilled to have Amanda Alvero and Rachel Siegel from Beyond a Ballot join me. They're spearheading a unique initiative to draw more Canadian women into the political sphere, breaking down barriers and fostering a multi-partisan community. It's not just about having a political stance, it's about making sure that that stance is heard. So let's explore how Beyond a Ballot is changing the game for women in politics. Welcome to What She Said, Rachel and Amanda.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Can you share with us the inspiration behind Beyond a Ballot and why you felt it was so crucial to focus specifically on women's engagement in politics?
Yeah, we also focus, just for your listeners for context, on women's engagement in politics, not women running in politics, because the real impetus for Beyond a Ballot was the idea that there is a lack of education, lack of resources in the Canadian market when it comes to women's touch points in politics every day. I mean, we engage in politics all the time. The fact that we are using the internet, that we are sitting in different provinces and able to chat, are all political decisions that have been made in this country. And yet, the people that are impacted by those decisions often don't realize that or understand how they're made. And so, understanding that hole in the system, this political education gap, I'm going to call it, in Canadian women, was really the impetus. And we've spent so long telling women in Canada that we need more women in the legislature, in the House of Commons. And that is an incredible and important goal and something that we need to continue. But first, we need to go back and we need to allow them the opportunity to learn and to understand and to feel empowered by that knowledge, which hopefully, I mean, obviously, we'd like if they would put their name on a ballot. But that's really where the company name comes from. It's beyond a ballot. It's how do you have a touch point in politics every day where you learn something or you talk to somebody or you chat with your kids about what's happening in the news? That's really our goal overall.
Your platform is fiercely multipartisan. How do you maintain this stance and still be friends? And how do you, and why is it important for fostering a healthy political dialogue for women?
Well, it's important because it doesn't mm-hmm. really exist right now. Mm-hmm. And I think that you know, really was the challenge. Both Rachel and I are political commentators. So on a very frequent basis, we're debating some of the, you know, most hot button issues. And we've also been engaged in social media, and we've seen a lot of the mudslinging, and we've been the recipient mm-hmm. of a lot of mudslinging because it's a pretty nasty, volatile environment out there. And we thought that we know that that's a barrier for women. We know that that is a turnoff. We wanted to have a forum, a place where we could have conversations about politics that were healthy and thoughtful and meaningful and compelling, and invited women in and said, listen, we can have two very different views on an issue. It doesn't mean that we have to throw mud while we're talking about it. And Rachel and I do share many different views, but you know what? We share more similar mm-hmm. views than we do different ones. And that's the other, you know, part of the podcast. It's really about finding the common ground. And I think we do that a lot. I think we do it well. And I think it's an open invitation to women to be a part of a new way of talking about politics.
Yeah, I just want to highlight for people before we continue that we just recorded a 1-hour podcast and we didn't even get nearly to everything I wanted to get to. And I really want people to go and listen to this because it's important for them to hear that you do both come from, one is left of center, one is right of center. And we managed to get through a whole hour without calling each other names or, you know, sharing misinformation. You know, it was a great hour. So I hope people will go listen because this is how discussions about politics should be. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And education and community are central to your mission. Can you elaborate on the types of educational resources and community initiatives beyond a ballot offers to encourage political participation?
Yeah, our goal is to just break down politics to the simplest degree so that people can retain it quickly and then spend the day thinking about it. So the way that we do that is we're trying to change the way that we communicate political information, one being our podcast. And the breakdown, Amanda and I usually will do a breakdown of some of the top headlines and then go into an interesting guest. Other ways we do it is educational resources like our education forum, which is coming. Stay tuned. But also things like we realize that women want community first. And we want them in that community to have political conversations. So one of the things we launched was a Beyond a Ballot book club. I don't read books, but apparently a lot of women do. And, you know, we want...
that is
I read
true.
Legal she books, which is kind of nerdy. But we put out this idea, like, let's come together across Canada, a group of women, and read Terry Fallis's book, Best Laid Plans, Jody Wilson-Raybould's book, Indian in the Cabinet, different political books like that, and have this group of women chat about the book while also learning about each other and what they're thinking. And everybody's in a different province. And it's just one example of how we're changing the political narrative through the resources, the community building that we're doing. And, you know, we're trying different things. Amanda and I are doing a live podcast taping for the first time in Vancouver in a couple of weeks. And, you know, we just want to see how that goes, having a live audience talking about politics. So Beyond a Ballot is really trying to change the way we think about politics historically, in traditional media historically, but also a real focus on the community building aspect of things.
What are some of the biggest challenges you've encountered in trying to get more women involved in politics, you know, either running or just even engaged with it? How do you hope to overcome these hurdles? Now, you've mentioned obviously education and the podcast, but, you know, are there any other avenues you're pursuing to get people more involved?
Well, I think for sure, I mean, part job one really is to have the healthy dialogue about the issues that matter. We had recently interviewed Kim Campbell, and on that podcast, we asked her the question. It was for International Women's Day. So we said, why should women be involved in politics? Why should they care? And she said, because their lives depend on it.
Absolutely.
Mic drop, right? It's like, because our lives depend on it. It is in every aspect of our lives, whether it's about childcare or healthcare or the roads outside or the internet that we're on or it's never ending. And so we have to have the conversations about the issues because they matter to every aspect of our lives. And if we can have healthy conversations about it, then people will be more informed and they'll be more compelled to be more engaged. And that's really how the you know, the snowball effect happens. And I think if we invite them in through conversations of the podcast, or if Rachel takes it a step further by having, you know, book clubs, or we use social media to our advantage to really break down some of those complicated and complex policies into bite-sized chunks because women are busy. We're busy, you know, between our jobs and our families and taking care of our aging parents. There's not a lot of time left in the day. And now some lady's going to say, I have to read a book or I have to listen to a podcast. So if you really want a really tiny bite-sized chunk, like go on to social media and we're going to break it down real fast for you. We are moms and business owners. And so, and we are politically engaged. So we know how the tiny slice of a pie that's left over for women in their day to be engaged, we're going to make the most of that slice.
Absolutely.
And I think also, when we talk about business owners, the thing to me that's so interesting is there's so many women's groups when it comes to entrepreneurship. And these groups are incredible. These are driven women that all want to support each other. And, you know, Beyond a Ballot, we do that also. We had a holiday market where we promoted women-owned Canadian businesses. So we're trying to be involved in the women's community outside of politics in the hopes that eventually that will bring people into the conversation around politics. But the number one thing when I go to these entrepreneurial events that fascinates me is that so many women come up to me and they say, I love what you're doing, but I just have no interest in politics. And I'm like, you're a business owner.
It's mind-boggling.
You are directly impacted. And it is mind-boggling, but also like, why? And the issue is that we've never had the right conversations in the right areas, because there's no access to resources to break it down. And so you talked about the impetus for Beyond a Ballot. And for me, that's a huge one. Just women that should be having these conversations, that should be at the front lines of moving these conversations, don't feel that they have the resources to do it.
Yeah, politics does not exist in a bubble. And, you know, it really impacts every aspect of our lives. And I don't think people pay enough attention to that, especially women. So I'm just thrilled that you have launched this platform. And thank you so much for joining me. I want people to be able to find you. So where can they do that?
Our website is beyondaballot.com, Instagram at beyondaballot, and basically all over social media, Beyond a Ballot, BAB.
And the podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
That's
Spotify,
right.
Apple, Audible, we're there.
All right, excellent. And just to, again, to hammer home the point that we have a 1-hour podcast. Also, people will be able to find it on their favorite podcast provider. And there will be a blog post accompanying this on whatshesaidtalk.com. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks.
Thank you for having us.
More with Candace Sampson and What She Said coming up on 105.9 The Region. Welcome back to What She Said with Candace Sampson on 105.9 The Region.
It's time for Saturday Night at the Movies, and Anne Brody is joining me for our usual segment. But first, Anne, what did you think of the Oscars this week?
I liked them better than I've liked any lately because I wasn't tweeting.
So you're able to focus.
Tweeting is a total distraction. It was full on me watching, and I enjoyed it. And I love Divine Joy Randolph and so many of them. And Ryan Gosling was there too much, but I did love his production number. What about you?
I didn't watch. I'm catching up on everything the day after and all the little segments. And I think the part that made me laugh the hardest this morning was Jimmy Kimmel's response to Donald Trump tweeting about him.
Thing of beauty. Absolutely.
All right. So let's get into what's new this week. Tell me about Manhunt.
That's my favorite thing that's out this week, and it's on Apple TV Plus. And, you know, you think history is dull, but history repeats itself. And it is repeating today what was happening when Abraham Lincoln was assassinated. It was the same day that the Confederate generals surrendered, or a couple of days later. And of course, Edwin Booth, the actor, was responsible. They never did really figure out the motive or whatever, but he was buried and it wasn't pretty. But you get the behind the scenes things. Lincoln's cupboard drawers were full of death threats because his intention was to end slavery. That is 300 years of free labor to build the South to end under him. And that's why the Great Upset happened. But so we go through the eyes of his Secretary of War, who on his own goes to investigate Booth. It's chilling. It is fantastically interesting in terms of the actual history and the number of unanswered questions that we have even today. It's the best thing out there this week. And it's very, very good, very watchable.
And this is a series, right? It's not a movie?
Yeah.
Series. Okay, excellent. Let's talk about Knox Goes Away, because this looks really intense. And it's, I have to say, I like Michael Keaton.
I like him too. And I think he's great in this, and he directs himself. So he plays John Knox, who is a contract hitman, very experienced one, who was ex-elite military and was hired by Al Pacino's crime boss. It's incredible watching him clean up after his many, many murders. But anyway, he has dementia, rapid dementia. He's given weeks, so he's got to get everything together. And then his son, who he hasn't seen in at least 16 years, shows up to say that he's just killed a man who raped his 16-year-old daughter. So he has to go and clean that scene. But the twists and turns and watching him go into blankness when he needs most to be aware is quite riveting. And I must say, Keaton does a great job of it. There's a lot of anti this film sentiment out there, and I don't see it. I thought it was very good. It's just, it challenges our disbelief. It's got a central depraved character that we somehow care about. I think it's pretty smart.
Where is that on? Is that Netflix?
It's in theaters.
Oh, theaters. Excellent.
Yes.
Okay. All right. I want to talk about Irish Wish, not because I think it's going to be the best movie of the year.
No, it's not.
I am always delighted to see the comeback kid, Lindsay Lohan. She looks healthy. She looks happy in this. It's nice to see her.
Oh, I so agree. And it's in my script, but I interviewed her for the first time in 1998 for the remake of The Parent Trap. And she played twins, and she was so delightful. And it was horrible to see her. And, you know, I interviewed her subsequently, but then she just disappeared and made sort of low grade projects and things because of her addictions. And she had a very, very tough time of it. And she was total tabloid fodder for years. And I'm sure that was very destructive to her soul and her sense of self. Yes, she's back. It's a light-hearted, sweet, romantic comedy. She goes to Ireland for her best friend's wedding to the guy she's in love with. And there's complications. There's a fairy godmother. I mean, this is family fare. And this, honestly, the settings are just so beautiful. And she's wearing these bright poppy colors, and her character's bright and poppy. And it just does your heart good to see it.
Yeah, absolutely. I was thrilled to see that. And that's on Netflix this week.
Yes, it is.
All right. Excellent. Just in time for St. Patrick's Day, I might add, with Irish Wish.
Yes.
all right. And quickly, you're going to have a lot more up this week on the American Society of Magical Negroes.
I am indeed. Yes.
This looks really good. So I actually can't wait to hear your review on it.
Good stuff, Candace.
Thank you so much, Anne. We'll see you next week.
We'll see you next week.
It is and how it could be, how it was and of course how it should be. Those who think it's dirty have a choice: pick up the needle, press pause, or turn the radio off. Will that stop us, Ben? I doubt it. All right then, come on, spin.
In a world where conversations about sexuality and healthy relationships are often shrouded in discomfort or taboo, everybody curious emerges as a beacon of enlightenment for young minds. This web series, designed for youths age 9 to 12, embarks on a journey of unscripted dialogue, shedding light on topics that are pivotal yet seldom broached with such candor. With a blend of engaging discussions and diverse representation, including insights from the Indigenous, Deaf, and Autism communities, this series is a testament to the power of open conversation. Today, I'm joined by Nadine Thornhill, a seasoned sexuality educator and co-host of Everybody Curious, to dive into the series' impact, its approach to inclusivity, and the importance of fostering these essential dialogues from a young age. Welcome to What She Said, Nadine.
Thank you for having me. And thank you for calling me seasoned. I think I'm going to use that from now on.
That's funny. Yeah, it's true. So Everybody Curious has taken a unique approach by incorporating unscripted conversations with kids about sexuality and healthy relationships. So what inspired this format and how do you feel it enhances the learning experience for both the kids and the audience?
So when I first met with Louise Pollard, who is the who's the producer and the creator behind the series, in our very first conversation, something she brought up with me was that she really wanted to explore what are kids of that age, that sort of in that tween quarter, what are they naturally curious about? And so we talked right away about how we felt it was important to, you know, to not have this be scripted, but to create an environment that was fun and comfortable and warm for the kids, and then just see what they had to say about, you know, the various topics that we were exploring. And one of the reasons that I love this approach is I think sometimes it can be very difficult for us as adults to sort of gauge what are kids perceiving, what are they actually curious about, also what do they know, because I mean, I know for me, you know, it's been 40 years since I was that age. And so I don't always remember what it felt like. And so I love that our series gives folks a chance to really see authentic kids. Like, these are not actors. They're not trained performers. They're just kids who have questions, who also have answers, who have thoughts, who live in the same world we do. And they, you know, are just sharing what they think and feel about, you know, these various topics.
Just quickly before we move on to the next question, I'm going to insert sort of go off path here a little bit. Have you ever been shocked by any of the questions asked to you?
Probably at this point, because I am seasoned, not as much, but I will say, so maybe not shocked, but I'm often surprised. I'm actually oftentimes more surprised by the answers than the question.
Oh, interesting.
It's still really, blows me away in the best possible way when, you know, we're in studio and, you know, we're discussing a topic, and sometimes it can be, you know, a really intense topic. Like, we might be discussing something like abortion, or we might be discussing something like, you know, gender diversity and identity. And these kids, like these really young kids, like 10, 11, 12, have such insight, and not only insight, I'm always really blown away by, you know, their compassion and their empathy and their, you know, emotional intelligence. They're just incredible. So I would say, more so than the questions, it's really the answers and the insight that these kids, that I'm just like, what is happening? Like, I was not I was not thinking these things, and I did not have this level of awareness when I was their age at all.
Yeah, it's a different world for sure. I'm sure they're getting a lot of their information. And this is why I think this series and why I wanted to talk to you is why I think it's so important is because kids today have access to so much more information than we ever did. And they need somewhere to have these healthy conversations, or else they're left to internalize it and work through it on their own. And that can be just as dangerous, really.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, something I've learned both through study and just through experience is that, you know, keeping information away from children doesn't really protect them. And as you say, you know, because they have exposure to these ideas, to these different topics, you know, what we can do as adults or even older people in their lives is we can help to give them context, to help them understand things in a more accurate way, or to give them tools so that they can sort of look at things critically on their own. But shutting down conversations or saying to them, oh, okay, well, you saw or you heard this thing, you're too young, let's just shut it down. It doesn't shut them down. You know, their brain exactly. Already experienced it. It's already there. You cannot put the toothpaste back in the tube. So what we can do then is, you know, just, you know, help them figure out what to do with the toothpaste now. I guess give them a toothbrush and give them instructions on how to brush their teeth with said toothpaste, if I'm going to belabor the analogy. But, yeah. And so, again, that's sort of something that we're trying to offer with our show there.
And you've also made a significant effort to include diverse perspectives, mm-hmm. including representation, as I mentioned in the introduction, from the Indigenous, Deaf, and Autism communities. Mm-hmm. Can you share how these voices contribute to the richness of the conversation and the importance of this inclusivity in sex education?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, sexuality, you know, not just our sexual experiences, but, you know, our identities, our bodies, how those things affect the way that, you know, we move through the world, and also how, you know, folks in the world perceive and treat us. Those are all connected. Sexuality is not sort of a separate thing that only happens in private and in the bedroom. Because it involves so many aspects of our humanity, it also overlaps with other aspects of our humanity, like our culture, like our ethnicity, you know, like our bodies, you know. And so whether those are able bodies or disabled bodies, or, you know, bodies of different sizes, bodies, you know, of different races and ethnicities, you know, these are all things that affect us. And so it's going to affect our sexuality. And oftentimes, you know, sex education, at least, you know, in our part of the world and in our society, it's sort of often treated as, you know, it's a one size fits all, and everybody's experience is exactly the same, and that these other aspects of our humanity don't sort of change and bring nuance into sexuality. So we really wanted to bring as many different people as we could into the conversation. Because we want as many people as possible to be able to relate to the show and to the information. But also just to let people see that, you know, yes, in some ways, there are certain things that are going to be very common, regardless of our identity, but also there are other things that are specific and deserve to have space and airtime and deserve to be explored as well. And so that was really the intention, because, you know, we really wanted to be everybody curious, not just, you know, to be frank, you know, not just like white, able-bodied, thin, yeah. You know, young people that we see on TV as like, you know, the sexy, sexualized people. It's, or not sexualized, but sexual people. It's really everybody.
And you mentioned, you know, you really do, you don't shy away from complex topics. You know, one of them specifically was about abortion. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm going to go back to how much access our kids have to information. I mean, if I go on TikTok, I see videos that haunt me. And there are 12-year-olds on there seeing the same videos. Yeah. So, you know, so it's better to have these conversations with an adult where you can have some back and forth rather than just consuming a video. So how do you navigate these sensitive discussions, ensuring they are age appropriate, mm-hmm. but still honest and informative?
Absolutely. So with the abortion episode in particular, the way that we chose to approach it is we first wanted to make a space to give the youth an opportunity to ask any questions or just talk about anything that might be on their mind around abortion. And what came out of that conversation was something that they really had noticed was just that there's a lot of controversy around it, and that people can have really strong feelings regardless of which, you know, side of the issue they're on. And so they wanted to talk about that. You know, they had some specific questions also about how do people feel, particularly people who might be considering abortion or people who have had abortions. They were, you know, very concerned and interested in, you know, what is that emotional journey for people? And so rather than sort of focusing the episode on trying to steer them towards a particular conclusion about abortion, we wanted to, you know, more create a space where it was like, yeah, ask your questions, but also let's talk about the fact that people can have often or sometimes diametrically opposed viewpoints on this. And why is that? And also, how do we sort of navigate conversations or issues where there is a lot of contention and it can become, you know, really combative, where it can be really difficult? How do we navigate feelings around that? And then we also just talked about, you know, how can we, you know, find support for ourselves or support each other when we might be going through something that's really emotionally complex, something we talked about around feelings people have if they are considering abortion, if they've had an abortion, is that the feeling, they can have a lot of different feelings. And sometimes those feelings it might seem like, oh, those are opposite feelings. Like, how could somebody both feel sad and relieved if they had an abortion? And so we just talked about, yeah, sometimes we just have a lot of different feelings. How can we find support for ourselves? And if we know someone who might be going through something like that, how can we offer support to them? Or how can we, you know, maybe we also talked about things like, you know, if somebody had a partner and one partner wanted an abortion and one partner didn't, how do we navigate those things? That's what we talked about.
I feel like this would be beneficial for some adults, Nadine.
Yeah.
This episode.
Absolutely. I often encourage adults to watch the show as well. First, because I'm like, I just want you to see how kids talk about these things, because it's often very different than what people expect. But also, you're right. I'll be honest, a lot of times, you know, when we're on set, because the episodes are 20 minutes, but we're on set filming for like hours. I, as an adult, get a lot out of sort of navigating conversations in these ways. I don't even want to say that they're simplistic, but just sort of stripping it back and getting to some of the like sort of core foundational elements of these things is really beneficial for me. And like, this is my job. I get into like the high level complex stuff all the time. And sometimes I'm like, it's really good just to get back to the simple human questions around these things.
Well, you know, I said that to be a little bit funny at the top there, but I think, you know, as I'm sitting here listening to you, I'm thinking a lot of kids, certainly in our generation, were probably raised not in an open household with these discussions, you know, and so may still be harboring things that they learned as a child that are wrong or, you know, misinformed. So absolutely, I can see where adults could benefit from this. We're going to take a quick commercial break. We're speaking with Nadine Thornhill from Everybody Curious, and we'll be right back after this commercial.
What we have here is subject to controversy. A three-letter word, some regard as a curse. He may fiend and have a dream because he's seen a teen in tight jeans. What makes him react like that is biological. The scheme on getting in those jeans is diabolical.
More with Candace Sampson and What She Said coming up on 105.9 The Region. Welcome back to What She Said with Candace Sampson on 105.9 The Region.
Let's talk about sex, baby.
Okay, we're back with Nadine Thornhill from Everybody Curious. Nadine, how do you see Everybody Curious evolving from here? Are there new topics or areas you're particularly excited to explore in future seasons?
Yes. And so whenever we have our, you know, whenever we're thinking about a new season, that's always the first conversation that we have is, all right, what are we going to be talking about next? And, you know, in part, it's influenced by, you know, what are the conversations that are happening in sort of larger society. So something that I would love to do personally is I would love to do a season that is like purely a queer season. I would love to get deeper into like sexual orientation and gender identity. And I would love to do something, although I'm not sure how it would go exactly, but I would love to do something even deconstructing something like the idea of biological sex as a binary, because that is a huge misconception that exists. And I know these are conversations that people are having right now in society. So I would love to do something like that. I don't know how we would ever pull this off. I would also love to do a musical theater season or a musical season. That is just like the theater nerd in me that will not die. and I would love to have like song and dance and musical numbers. But I'm not a trained dancer or singer, so I don't know if anybody else wants that, but I would love to do something like that. So we'll have to see, you know, where future seasons take us. And it's always very much a collaboration between myself and my co-host, Spencer West, Louise Pollard, who, is, as I said, is the executive producer and the creator of the series. And then also our director, Kim Harris. You know, we're sort of the core four. We sit down, we think about the seasons, we all throw out our ideas, throw them in the mix, and then see what comes out. So I never know for sure where we're going in the future, but I'm excited about it.
And where do you, the kids that join you in these shows, where, how do you find them?
We cast a really wide net. So, you know, we all tap into our various networks and we're like, who do you know? These are the sort of kids that we're looking for. As the show goes on, that network expands. But yeah, we just basically, you know, ask anyone and everyone that we know, who are the kids in your life? Who's amazing? Who wants to be part of the show? And it always just comes together beautifully. We never know who we're going to get until a couple of months before shooting. And it always works. So, you know, if anyone is listening and, you know, is a fan of the show, keep your eye out, because at some point I'm sure there will be a future call for more kids. So if you know an awesome kid, just, you know, keep in touch with us and we'll let you know, because we're always looking for new people.
All right. So for parents and educators then who are inspired by Everybody Curious and want to initiate these conversations at home or in the classroom, what advice would you offer to start these discussions in a positive and impactful way?
All right. First of all, one of my pieces of advice is it's okay if you feel like nervous or uncomfortable or you're not sure where to start. And that is actually a way you can start the conversation. You can simply say, okay, look, I'm a little nervous about this, or I'm not sure how to start in with this, but I would love to have a conversation and bring up the topic. I'd love to have a conversation with you about abortion. I'd love to have a conversation with you about, you know, what's going on, you know, on social media. I'd love to have a conversation with you about sexting. Just let them know. Like, it's a human, regular conversation. My second piece of advice is, as much as you can, ask questions. And ask questions from a place of curiosity to find out sort of where they're at, what they know. You don't necessarily have to go in and like lecture and say like, these are the three points that I really want you to know.
Right.
Take your time with it. It doesn't have to happen all at once. And then finally, the last thing I'll offer is, it's a really quick 3-point framework that I offer for people, is own your values. Anything that's like an opinion, a feeling, a belief, I feel, I think, I believe, state the facts. So, you know, anything that's like sort of scientific fact, go ahead and say it. Like, condoms reduce the rate of pregnancies. That's just the fact.
Right.
And just try to avoid myths and generalizations. That's it.
And probably pull in episodes of Everybody Curious to watch together.
Watch them together or watch them or like just send them a link. You know, my kid is older now. He's 17. But one way that we communicate is we just send each other like links to videos that we think are interesting. So maybe you just like text them the link to the episode and they can watch it and you can talk about it whenever. Yeah.
All right. Excellent. So where can people do that? Where can they keep up with you? Where can they find the show? And I imagine you have social media channels.
Yes, we do. Okay. So in terms of the show, you can follow Everybody Curious on social. It is at Everybody Curious on Instagram and TikTok. You can go to the website, everybodycurious.com, to watch the episodes, or they're also available on YouTube. So if you just put in Everybody Curious, you will find us. As for me, you can find me anywhere on the internet. Just put Nadine Thornhill in your Google search, and you will find me. I'm NadineThornhill.com. That's my website, at Nadine Thornhill on socials. Yeah, but you'll find me. Just Nadine Thornhill, Google. That's the easiest way to find where I am on the internet.
All right. Nadine, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a delight.
Thank you for having me. It was great.
Let's talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things.
Life's like this. You fall and you crawl and you break and you take what you get and you turn it into honesty. Promise me I'm never gonna find you faking.
Epilepsy is a condition that touches the lives of 1 in 100 Canadians, yet it remains shrouded in mystery and stigma for many. March is Epilepsy Awareness Month, and it shines a light on this neurological condition, offering a chance to deepen our understanding and support those affected. From the unexpected challenges of daily life to the triumphs of resilience and community, epilepsy's impact is as diverse as the individuals it touches. Joining me today is Mackenzie Muldoon, Epilepsy Toronto's Director of Communications, to share insights into the realities of living with epilepsy, the significance of Purple Day, and how we can all contribute to a more informed and empathetic society. Welcome to What She Said, Mackenzie.
Thank you so much, Candace. What a pleasure to be here. Thanks for that wonderful intro, too.
Could you start by giving us an overview of epilepsy and why it's so important to raise awareness about this condition, especially during Epilepsy Awareness Month?
Absolutely. Like, as you said in the introduction, it affects 1 in 100 people, which is very prominent. It's a lot of people. And that's just the tip of the iceberg, because anyone who lives with or loves someone with epilepsy knows that the effects go far beyond that. So it's very prevalent in our society. It's something that comes up in most people's lifetime. At some point, they'll come across someone who lives with epilepsy, maybe witness someone having a seizure. And most of the time, even if you don't know that you know someone with epilepsy, you do. Because as you said, epilepsy can look so different for different people. And so for some people, they are able to manage it very well with medication or diet or surgery. But for others, it is part of their daily life and something that they must, a challenge that is constantly there. But it's important for us to learn about it, because it can happen to anyone at any time, at any age in life. There are certain things that make it more likely to happen. Sometimes there's genetics, sometimes there's brain injury, that sort of thing, stroke, those things can lead to epilepsy. But in over 50% of the cases, people, we don't know why it happens, and it can happen to anyone. So even if it's not something that's affected you at this point in your life, it's still worth learning about, because you just never know.
Honestly, I just learned a whole lot in that whole conversation, that whole little answer to my question. I learned a whole lot. I did not know that it could develop at any time. That is new information to me. You are highlighting stories this month of individuals who live with epilepsy to shine a light on the unique challenges they face. Can you share maybe one of those with us?
100%. So we have so many incredible members with Epilepsy Toronto, and we hear stories all the time of people both all the sides. You know, there are people, someone like Wendy, who has been a longtime member at Epilepsy Toronto, who's gone through so many challenges in her lifetime and has brought so much to our agency, as well as, you know, used so many of our services over the years. She's a mother of two, a grandmother, and a woman who has her own business. But she has, her seizures are not controlled by medication. They continue throughout her life. She has faced all kinds of stigma and prejudice. She tells stories of things like, recently, her daughter gave her a really nice wallet for Christmas, and she was at a grocery store and she had a seizure and someone stole the wallet while she was having the seizure. You know, things like that. So that you're just like, really? That's even possible? She's also told stories about having seizures on public transit and someone filming it and then posting it to social media saying, making reference to her being on drugs or, you know, things like that. So these are the kind of stigmas and misunderstandings that people with epilepsy can face. The other thing that with epilepsy, because it's such a spectrum, that some people, it can be very debilitating, you know, having seizures on a very regular basis that are uncontrolled, it can cause real havoc to your life. And for many other people, they're able to control it with medication. And so for those people, sometimes they don't want to come out as being someone living with epilepsy. There are stigma and they can avoid it by not talking about it. And so, which only kind of heightens the stigma on the other side. There is such a range. Many people with epilepsy, one of our stories is a woman named Nikki who works in media, has for decades, and didn't even know she had epilepsy until she was diagnosed well into her 30s. She'd been having seizures for years. But her seizures, another big misconception is that everyone who has seizures falls to the ground and shakes. That is one type of seizure. That's a tonic-clonic. But there are many types. And what Nikki was having most of her life were called focal aware seizures. So she didn't lose consciousness. She didn't fall. It all happened internally to her. And she had learned to even be able to continue conversations while her seizures were happening. And she didn't know what they were. She thought it was something inside her. And it took a long time to get diagnosed. But it is still important to be diagnosed because she is now found medication and treatment for her seizures. And there are risks involved in seizures. And if they go untreated, for the risks increase. So the likelihood of her seizures getting worse would be increased if she didn't get treated. Also, there's something called SUDEP, which is sudden unexplained death with epilepsy. And that is something that it's fairly rare, but it is possible. And the less, if you aren't diagnosed and aren't being treated, the likelihoods increase. So that's why we always think people need to get treated, get the diagnosis if they're experiencing seizures.
And I think these stories, like the two that you just shared, they're very powerful. And I think they're important for people to hear to understand what people with epilepsy go through. So thank you for sharing those two. Purple Day is a key event during Epilepsy Awareness Month. So can you tell us more about the origins of this day and how people can participate to show their support?
Absolutely. It's an amazing day because it's got such a great feel-good story to it. It was started in, I believe it was 2008, by a 9-year-old girl named Cassidy Megan, a Nova Scotia girl who had been diagnosed with epilepsy a little bit before that and had felt a lot of loneliness and isolation with her diagnosis. And so her way of dealing with that was to bring everyone in and include everyone in her diagnosis and explain her epilepsy to her school. And at the time, lavender was a color associated with epilepsy, but her 9-year-old brain didn't really get what lavender was. So thought purple, everyone gets purple. So she called it Purple Day. And it started with just that, her reaching out to her school and you know, small community. And from there, it grew and grew and grew. And now it is celebrated around the world, Purple Day for Epilepsy. And it's a day to mark to both raise awareness, but also to celebrate the people who live with epilepsy and the amazing things that they have accomplished and what they're capable and their resilience, because they they do deal with amazing amounts of uncertainty and fear sometimes. But it is a beautiful community I've been really lucky to be a part of. And Purple Day is sort of the pinnacle of it. So it's a day for both Purple Pride. It's a great day to share on social media. It's a great day to wear purple, to let your colleagues, your coworkers, let them know it's Purple Day and it's a day to mark epilepsy awareness. Maybe definitely on our website, we have classroom kits that can go, that teachers can use from grades from kindergarten up to grade 12. We have videos and worksheets and all that sort of stuff, posters that people can print off. There's lots of places online that you can learn something, or maybe there is someone in your life that has epilepsy. So that's a great day to say, hey, I hear this day is coming up. How can I support you? What can we share? What would you like me to know? What would you like the world to know about your seizures, your epilepsy, or just, you know, the stigmas or the misconceptions that you've had to deal with? And so it's a great way to get the conversation started.
All right. Incredible. People might be listening to this and they want to get involved. They might have a loved one or possibly even themselves. How can they get involved with Epilepsy Toronto? Actually, this is a threefold question. How can they get involved with Epilepsy Toronto? What resources and opportunities are available with you? And for my listeners outside of the Toronto area, is there a national organization they can look into, or I assume there might be provincial ones?
There is. So Epilepsy Toronto, we are obviously based in Toronto, but we also have a website with lots of resources that are good for everyone. So epilepsytoronto.org is our website. We have social media. We're on Instagram and Facebook and X and all over the place. So look us up. We have some great resources, like I mentioned about the classroom kits. We are part of an organization called Canadian Epilepsy Alliance. We are also part of Epilepsy Ontario. So there are ways to find support all across Canada. So definitely, if you're not in the Toronto area, you can look up Canadian Epilepsy Alliance, and it will direct you to the agency closest to you. Now, we are service agencies, and so our role is sort of, when you leave the doctor's office, helping make life better for people living with epilepsy and their family members. There are, of course, also medical institutions and all that sort of stuff. But finding resources, I think our website is pretty great. We've got videos, we've got interviews, we've got stories, and lots of links to lots of other agencies and lots of other resources. Did I cover all three questions?
I think you did. Yeah, you got them all. This is great. I really thank you so much. This was incredibly enlightening. I had no idea about a lot of the things you shared here today. So thank you so much for joining me today, Mackenzie, and we'll have you back again another time.
I love that. And thanks for being part of Epilepsy Awareness Month and helping to raise that awareness and reduce the stigma.
My pleasure.
That's it for What She Said this week. Stay up to date with our newsletter by signing up at whatshesaidtalk.com, and be sure to follow on social at What She Said Talk on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for videos of these interviews and more. You can also catch me on TikTok at Candace Said. Finally, be sure to subscribe to What She Said with Candace Sampson on Apple and Spotify to catch past episodes and extended podcasts. I'll be back next week with another What She Said on 105.9 The Region.
Previous episodes of What She Said on 105.9theregion.com.